This was Labor Day weekend at its best.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, Labor Day weekend has come and gone. What a fun weekend of football all around. The CFL games were great. We had the classic in Hamilton that we're going to talk about. We had that amazing game in Winnipeg. And in Hamilton, like as you know, watching the game, being a Ticats fan, that Labor Day classic was played at night for the first time in a very long time. And the reason for that was the Ticats had partnered up with McMaster to have this football day in Hamilton thing. So at noon, the McMaster Marauders hosted the U of T Varsity Blues, which, full disclosure, is the school that I went to, in a game at Tim Hortons Field. So with it being Mac and U of T, I decided to pick up some tickets and go to this game. And it's the first CIS game that I have attended in probably 25 years. And one of the few that I've watched, like over the years, I've watched a few Vanier Cups, but we've talked about this probably over a year ago. Finding CIS football on TV is very difficult. I've decided this year that I'm going to try to get into it a bit more, mostly so that when we have Justin Dunk on here to talk about the draft, like we did this year, we're going to try to get him on again next year. I can be a little bit more knowledgeable about what's going on. And I watched this game between U of T and Mac, and U of T is a perennial garbage team, as much as it pains me to say. And they did get beat 32-5 in this game by the Marauders. But I was surprised by how well Toronto actually played. It was really a bunch of mistakes that the team made as to why the score got out of hand. And McMaster has some amazingly talented players, especially on the offensive side of the football. Their quarterback is very good. They have a few receivers that are just probably pro prospects. If I knew more about them, I would be able to tell you for sure. But in watching them play, one of them, I want to say his name is Vander Voort, made a spectacular one-handed catch that even though I was cheering for the opposite team, it's like you see something like that and you just go, man, I can't hate on that. It was a lot of fun watching some CIS football, and it was a lot of fun going to a game live. And I think I live so close to McMaster. I think I'm going to have to go to more of these games. I got a friend who goes to McMaster, and she has said that she wants to go to more games. So I'm thinking I'm going to be watching a lot more CIS this year, Mike.
Well, yeah, if you're close, you might as well check it out. I mean, they got a nice little stadium there. The Ticats have played there before. But yeah, I always enjoyed watching CIS football. I used to watch it when they had the game of the week on the Score Network back in the day. And even when I was out east, they'd have, game of the week on the local station. And I used to check it out. And yeah, I wish you could find it on TV, but we've talked about that before. And it's a lot of fun. I always watch the Vanier Cup every year. And I remember a couple of years ago when Laval and McMaster played, and that was one of the best games I've ever seen. So yeah, it's good football. And I hope to be able to watch some of it this year.
Well, that's just it. That's what kind of surprised me. And I don't mean to sound I don't want to put anyone down, but you always think of CIS ball as being not as good. And when you see the top teams play each other, like when you watch a Vanier Cup, these are the two of the five best teams in the country, so you expect some good football. This was a very good football game. Again, Toronto made a ton of mistakes, and they did lose by 4 touchdowns, so you look at that and go, well, it couldn't have been that great. But it was a lot more exciting than I actually anticipated it being, and so it just got me excited to watch more. And the thing I don't get, we talked about how Sportsnet has the rights to the CIS, and I was looking at the upcoming, like what they were doing on Saturday. It's like, well, why aren't they showing a game? And they had Blue Jays games or something like that. But they also own the old Score, and they were all they had on there when this game was on, when this U of T Mac game was on. The Score, which is now what, Sportsnet 360, I think. Yeah. All they had on there was sports highlights. You're telling me that you can't set up a camera at Tim Hortons Field to broadcast a game at noon on a holiday Monday? I'm sure people would have attracted fans. The game itself had over 5,800 people attend, which, from what I understand, is a very good crowd for a CIS game. So, and this was Mac against U of T. Imagine if this was like Mac against Western. There might have been 10,000 people there.
And I mean, the MLS ratings are putrid, and I'm sure that they could drum up close to those numbers for CIS football. Maybe I'm totally off on this, but I think they could probably be close to what MLS ratings are.
I think you're right. I really do. And if what I saw on Monday is what this product is capable of, and we're talking about a top-tier team against a lower-tier team, I think this would be. I think people need to give the CIS a bigger chance. They need to just. If this was on television, people would watch. People would get excited. It's fun football. It's good football. I wish more people could watch it, and if they could, I think they would. But that said, I do have a cool story. So in the third quarter, just before, third quarter, they cut off beer sales. Me and my friend decide we're going to go to the concession stand. We're going to get a beer before they close because it was a very hot day in Hamilton on Monday, and the beer was going down like water, Mike, which, as you know, is very, very dangerous. But it tasted oh so good when it touched those lips. Oh, man, I'm thinking about it right now. Anyway, so we're standing in line waiting for the line to go so we can get some drinks. And I get a tap on the shoulder, and I turn around and hi, Josh, how you doing? And it was Ticats CEO Scott Mitchell who recognized me. I don't normally think of myself as like a big shot or anything like that, but this is a guy who's really high up. He's like Bob Young's right-hand man, essentially. That's like the number two guy in the entire Ticats organization, and I guess for my work on Three Down, and years ago when I ran my own Blogs KiwiWee site, when I finished doing that, when I decided I couldn't do it anymore, I actually got a really nice email from Scott Mitchell thanking me for promoting the team, and even though they might not always agree with what I said, they respected my opinion, they respected that I had reasons for what I said. It was a really, really nice email, and actually it's one of the few from years past that I've actually kept because it's nice to feel appreciated. But yeah, you kind of feel like a mini celebrity sometimes. So when Scott Mitchell said, hey, how you doing? I said, man, I'm having a great time. This is a great event. I really hope we do this again next year. He introduced me to, I want to say his name is Matt Afiniak. I know it's Matt. I think that's the last name. And Scott Mitchell was like, this is the guy right here. Shook his hand, said hello. I said, dude, you got to do this every year. This is awesome. Doesn't always have to be Mac in Toronto because I don't think that's really fair to U of T for if every year. They only play McMaster once. So if every year they came to Hamilton, kind of competitive disbalance. But I said, just a game this here. And then you got the Ticats game later. I was like, it was an awesome, awesome show. It was so much fun to be at. So maybe my little... my little run-in with those guys. We'll keep this thing going for years to come. But yeah, so Scott Mitchell knows who I am. That's kind of neat, right? Like, it's cool that I'm a little bit excited about this, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that they should incorporate CFL and CIS more often. I mean, I know they've done the Vanier Cup and Grey Cup on the same weekend before. You know, have the Vanier Cup in the same city on the Saturday and then the Grey Cup on the Sunday. I think it's a great idea. I know that they did it back in 2007 in Toronto, played the night before the Grey Cup. And, you know, I think it's just a cool thing to do. And then they had that concert, Tim Hicks or whatever his name is. I mean, I'm not big into country, but if you can, you know, make it an event, then you do that. Just the more the better. So I think it was a great idea to pop the CIS game, then the concert, and then the CFL game on Labor Day.
Well, the Vanier Cup's in Hamilton this year and next, I believe, and I've seen ticket prices. They're very, very reasonable. I'm going to pick up some. I'm going to the Vanier. I don't care who's there. I want to support this product. We've always talked about you and I don't talk about it a lot, but Canadians talk about the CIS and how we should get behind stuff that's Canadian. And this is as Canadian as it gets. These are students playing ball, playing a game that we love to watch, out there doing it for the love of it. We got to support this. So even if it's not much money from my pocket, I'm going to go and try to support this as much as I can. Went to this game on Monday. Hopefully I'll get a chance to go to some Mac games later this year. And when it comes to the Vanier Cup, my butt is going to be in a seat at Tim Hortons Field watching whomever it is playing that ball game. And I'm sure if the last few years of Vanier Cups that I've seen, the last two with McMaster, or not the last two with McMaster, because they did get blown up by Laval the year after they beat Laval in Vancouver, but they had that one against Montreal a few years ago. It's exciting football, so I'm excited. I'm ready for it. I'm looking forward to the Vanier being here. So, and I'm going to the Vanier Cup and not going to the Grey Cup, so that's kind of a reverse of what you'd expect.
You know, the prices for the Grey Cup are a little extraordinary, so I'm sure the Vanier Cup is a lot cheaper than the Grey Cup game.
Yeah, it's much, much cheaper, and maybe that'll work out to the Vanier Cup's benefit, and there'll be a packed house at Tim Hortons Field watching whomever. If McMaster gets there, I think you're easily going to pull in 20,000 fans for a Vanier Cup if the Marauders get there in Hamilton. So this week, the Ticats ran a Labor Day contest on DraftKings, and I decided, you know what? What the heck? I'm going to try this DraftKings things out. They've been doing it. We talked about it when the partnership was announced. They've been doing this since the start of the season, and I figured I've been playing TSN Fantasy with my dad all year, And DraftKings is basically the same thing. If you play TSN Fantasy, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You pick players, you have a salary cap, where however they perform, that's how you get. I finished 55th in this thing and won $12. So I got $12 to play with, and I'm playing again this week. So they got me hooked on the free game, and now they're going to get some of my money. And it's a lot of fun. So I know you play TSN Fantasy. I know your girlfriend plays TSN Fantasy. And if I'm not mistaken, she's doing pretty well in TSN Fantasy, is she not?
Yeah, she's the 11th place. She was first at one point, which is crazy.
Okay, well, then you got to kick her in the rear and tell her that she needs to start playing some DraftKings, because if she's doing that well in TSN Fantasy, she'd do just as well on DraftKings, and she could make some money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, too. So if you're out there and haven't played it yet, I know I'm late to the game on this because people have been playing it since week one, but it is kind of fun. And when you win money, that's always happy, like, right? Like, you're always happy when you win some money.
Yeah, it's a pretty big rush when you win some money on the, gambling.
All right. So, speaking of winning, oh boy. So, our fantasy team, the last little bit before we get into the absolutely classic Labor Day game on Monday, we squeaked by the BC Lions Den by a score of 181 to 180. We needed every single milliyard that CJ Gable and Luke Tasker and Chad Owens and those guys got us on Monday. Man, that was a close game. I don't think I've ever been in a fantasy game, be it in CFL fantasy, NFL fantasy, whatever, that has come down to 1 point. I've seen 1 point games in leagues I've played in, but I don't know if I've ever been involved in one. That is a skin of your teeth victory. So after the win, we're now 7-4 on the season, and we are still atop the standings in the CFL Podcast Family League. But we're tied with two other teams, the 2-0 podcast and the Eskimo Empire podcast. But because we are a scoring juggernaut, Mike, we sit atop the standings. We scored the most points in the league so far this year. And that, to me, more so than wins and losses, tells you how well your fantasy team is doing. Because you could lose games where you score, well, in this case, BC Lions then lost this game. They scored 180 points. They just happened to come up against a team that scored 181. So I think if you're scoring a lot of points, that tells me more about how talented your fantasy team is necessarily than wins and losses. And if you're scoring a lot of points like we are, we got a good chance to maybe make this in the second half and take that title and get some bragging rights amongst the rest of these podcasts. So our next game is against the guys at Rouge Radio. We beat them back in week 5, 196 to 129. I say we just do that again, get ourselves to 8-4 and start cruising on into the playoffs, sir.
Yep, and there is a playoffs.
I believe so. I guess I'll find out, because I know some leagues. I think our league, the one that we are in, we just go all the way through, right?
Yeah, I can change that. Like, I can switch it up because I was at the commissioner's thing the other day, and it said playoff for week whatever. So I'm not sure what's going to happen with that.
You know what? My team is so garbage in that this year that whatever you choose to do, you choose to do. Although I did see that I beat your girlfriend's team this week, so a little bit of bragging rights, I guess, but my team's still trash. Yeah. But hey, last year I was a juggernaut, this year not so much. I'm giving you all a chance to win a championship, and I'll just come back next year and destroy you all again.
Yeah, that's what you get for having life and not being live at the draft.
So. Yeah, well, you know what? It's all right. I do this for the fun of it. As long as we're having fun, we're having a good time, we can chirp each other a little bit. That's all that matters, right?
Exactly.
There's no money on the line. But okay, so enough of this stuff. Mike, we got to get into this game. Simply put, this was a classic, an absolute classic between the Ticats and the Argos on Monday. Down 27-7 in the second quarter. And from then on out, this Ticats team decided they were going to put the pedal to the metal. And they outscored the Argos 42-9. The rest of the way for a 49-36 win. This game had everything, Mike. We had the good, we had the bad, we had some great, we had some terrible. Basically, we had it all, Mike. We had it all. Let's start with the offense. Where are you going to start here? Because there's a lot to pick apart, man. Just what a game. What a game. Actually, before we get to the offense, was this one of the best games you've ever seen, period?
It was pretty damn entertaining, and it's just great to see in Southern Ontario, the two Southern Ontario teams putting on a great display of football, a great entertaining game. One of my friends, old friends from that I grew up with, I saw he posted on Facebook that he was at the game, and he's, more of an NFL fan. I don't think he pays attention much to the CFL, but just to, get eyes on the product like that that normally wouldn't watch it, to see a game like that is a really good thing for Southern Ontario market. I think it was one of the best games I've seen in a while, and there's been some good games this year, some really exciting football. So it was great to watch a back and forth game like that. It was nail biting. I didn't like it in the first half necessarily. The Argos really took it to the Ticats, and I thought we were going to lose that game for a while there, but just a great football game to watch, and it was really exciting.
Absolutely. Exciting is the best word to use. I don't think I have seen a game. This might be the most exciting game I think I've seen at Tim Hortons Field. I'm sure someone will clue me in on a game. Maybe this is recency bias, but I know the Montreal game when the Ticats won the East Final was pretty darn exciting, but that was over fairly quickly. Well, maybe not fairly quickly, but it. Around the third quarter, the game, the Ticats had started to build that momentum. I think Banks had had his two returns. It seemed like it was over. This one was from start to finish. Just it took until what? Emmanuel Davis's pick six with what about 5 minutes left, I guess, before this game was really decided. And there's not much you can ask for as a football fan. Like you had it all. There were, like I said, there were plays on defense that both teams made. There were plays on special teams that both teams made. The offenses were clicking. Like Caleros and Ray threw for like almost 800 combined yards. They threw for what, six touchdowns, seven t like. Just like what an amazing football game. Like it was a treat to be at. The only game I can think of off the top of my head that I've ever attended live that came close to this was the 2013 East Final that had the same sort of back and forth thing. And surprisingly enough, it was the same two teams. So when it comes to Labor Day, you never know what to expect. Last year, I believe the Ticats won by 30 points or something. They absolutely blew the Argos out. I prefer those games because they're a lot easier on the heart. But for pure entertainment value, you could not beat what you got on Monday night. Not even close. No football league. This will be one of those games that at the end of both the CFL season and the NFL season, you'll look back on and go, that was one of the five best football games played in 2016.
Yeah, and if you watch that and you didn't like it, you're not a real football fan, as far as I'm concerned. So.
Oh, absolutely. If you find a reason to complain about anything to do with this game, if after this game was over, the only thing you didn't just say was wow, then you know what? Just stop watching football. You don't like football, period. You just don't like football.
But now with the offense, I mean, what can you say about Zach Kolaros? He was 28 for 35, 80%, 359 yards, four touchdowns, and one interception. A little bit of a shaky start, but after that, it was lights out for him. He just looks like he's back on, the way that he did last year. He's just on fire right now. The numbers are crazy since he's been back, and just to start the talk about the offense, you have to talk about Zach.
Can we start talking MOP with this guy yet? I'm being honest. I'm not being a homer. At least I'm not trying to be. The numbers over the season so far. This is four games. Remember, this is four games. 1,510 yards, 14 touchdowns, two interceptions. Now, I've gone out there and talked about if we prorate this over 18 games, what his numbers would be. It's like 60. I think it's 6,700 plus yards, 63 touchdowns. What I'm saying is record-breaking pace that he is on. But he's going to play. Fingers crossed that there's no injury. He's going to play 12 games this year, and right now he's third in the league in touchdown passes after four games, and he's three behind both Bo Levi Mitchell and Mike Riley, and they've played 10 games. He's not going to come close to their passing yards. I understand that, but if this guy puts up, I don't know, 4,500 yards and 30 plus touchdowns, I don't really care how good Mitchell and Riley is. Most outstanding player is the guy who has been most outstanding. If he puts those numbers up over 12 games, how do you not give this guy the award? How?
If he keeps on his pace, it's gonna make it interesting for sure. I still think that Riley and Mitchell are the front runners, but I mean, he's on a crazy pace. Whoa. Sorry, that was my phone
Oh,
went off.
show me what you got. You watch it. Your ringtone is Rick and Morty?
Well, you're a Rick and Morty guy, eh?
Do I have two eyes, two working ears, and a beating heart? Who isn't a Rick and Morty guy?
So, funny, actually, that is a funny story. I was in the bathroom at work, doing my thing. I was in the stall. I don't have to really get into it much more
Hold
than
on, hold
that.
on, hold on. You were taking a dump at work, and that ringtone came on, and please tell me
Someone
someone.
was taking a at the urinal, and They went off and it was pretty loud. Show me what you got. I don't know who was in there, but I didn't say anything. But yeah, you probably thought, I don't know what the hell's going on here. But yeah, that was pretty good.
Oh my God, I'm so glad that that happened. That is one of the best stories I've ever heard. Holy smokes. I'm picturing myself taking a piss and just hearing, "Show me what you got." I'd be like, "Wait, what the hell?" Oh my God, that's great. Okay, where were we again? What?
Well, I don't even remember what we're talking about here.
Oh, Zach Claros. We're talking about
Oh,
MOP. Here
MOP.
we go. Holy
Yeah.
smokes.
Yeah, so, I
Yeah,
mean,
Zach
he's.
Claros is great. Should we just leave it at that?
Yeah,
I've
pretty
lost
much.
what I thought I was gonna
I
say.
mean, yeah, and he's putting up great completion percentage. Just like I talked a lot about it last week. Ricky Ray, yes, great completion percentage. Trevor Harris, yes, but they're not throwing it downfield like Zach is. So to have that percentage and the numbers that he has, he's gonna be, if he keeps going this way, he's gonna be up there. I'm not sure if he's gonna get it, but he's gonna be in the conversation,
I'm just so happy that he's our quarterback. Like
think.
that's basically
Yeah.
I'm just happy that he's with us and he signed that lucrative extension before he got back from injury and he's looking like he's been worth every single penny. And this team may only be sitting at 5-5 right now, but with him playing like this, it's only a matter of time before they start going on a run and they start being we start looking at the Ticats as we look at the Calgary Stampeders as a team that just year in, year out. Yeah, they're going to win 10, 11, 12, 13 games, and they're going to be in the hunt for the Grey Cup. With as long as this guy is here and this core group stays together, I just really like what we have in Hamilton. But that's the overview. What else from the offense from this particular game really stood out for you? I think I know where you're going to go next because
Yeah.
this is something we've been talking about all year, and we finally saw it.
CJ Gable, I mean, he just exploded in this game. 12 carries, 135 yards, 11.2 yard average. I mean, that's crazy. His longest run was 53 yards, and he was just running very physical out there. He'd run into people. There was a couple times where you thought he was going to be stopped behind the, first down marker, and he just willed his way to the first down. And he just the way he ran the ball was very encouraging. I haven't seen that CJ Gable in a long time. He hasn't been given the opportunity really to show what he has, but no, he showed me. You just say to him, "Show me what you got," and he did. But yeah, it was. The offensive line did a great job opening up holes. I know that the starter. A starter in the middle for the Argos went down, and they took advantage of that. But even before that, he was seemed to be a really big part of the game plan, and it was awesome to see.
I will sit here and I will say that I think that his 53-yard run, I believe the score was still 27-7 at the time, and he busted off that 53-yard run that got them down to about the 3-yard line, I believe it was, somewhere around there. And the last like 4 yards, he dragged a tackler before he went down. It set up the Brandon Banks touchdown. I will say to you, and I will say to anyone, I think that was the play, that was the catalyst that sparked this team to make that gigantic run to win this game. That was such a huge run, and just all game. It wasn't he yes, he had 53 of his 135 yards on that run, but everything else you said he ran hard. He ran with purpose. He found the hole and he just went. It was like we were watching CJ Gable from 2013. I hope that this continues. It is the Ticats, so we know that there's going to be times when he's not gonna come close to getting 12 touches in a game, but it was just proof positive that when this guy gets the opportunity and the line in front of him opens the holes, he can make things happen. And again, just like with Zach Collaros, I'm very happy that we have a guy like CJ Gable on our football team.
Yeah, he just does so many things. He's one of the best blockers in the league, running back wise. He catches the ball out of the backfield. I know we talked about this before, but he had 3 catches for 28 yards. That's added to the total. I mean, you gotta think that he's going to be incorporated more into the offense with the weather starting to get colder. The running games becomes more important the closer you get to the playoffs. So if this is a preview of what we're going to see down the stretch, then I'd be a pretty happy Ticat fan.
He had 15 touches in this game. I say, and I know we've said multiple times on this show, Get this guy 15 to 18 touches a game, be it through the run or the pass, and I think you'll see numbers like this. He's obviously not going to put up 163 total yards on 15 carries every week, but sometimes he will. And all he needs to do to make these yards count is bust a big one. Then we know he's capable of busting a big one. So I was just super happy to see him play this well. Anything else from the offense that you want to touch upon before we get to the defensive side of the ball?
Well, I thought that Zach had more time in the pocket. You know, it's funny that we were complaining about the offensive line last week and there was no sacks. And I think they had a better game this week, even though they gave up two sacks, I believe. Just a better pocket, a cleaner pocket, more time for Zach to make his reads, do his thing. So I was happier this week with the offensive line play than I was last week.
Yeah, kind of strange how that works out. It seems like he was rushed a lot more against Calgary, even if they didn't get to him, whereas It felt like he did. I agree with you. It did feel like he had a little bit more time to make those big plays. He had a long bomb to Chad Owens. He had a big pass early in the game to Luke Tasker. So, yeah, you need to be protected to be able to stand in the pocket and make those 20-plus yard passes, and he had more than a few of those in this game, and I think it does come down to the offensive line playing a little bit better. Obviously, he was rushed. He was sacked on a couple plays, and he had the fumble that went back for a touchdown, but yeah, I do. I think the line played a lot better in this game despite the fact they gave up sacks, and I think that's why sacks for players and against players is a little bit misleading, because if you give up two sacks in a game on these teams, you get probably 50 to 60 plays would be my guess. In a game, maybe a little bit more, maybe 65 or so. If you give up two sacks and the rest of the game he's not touched, well, I'd say that's a much better game than, say, you give up 10 quarterback pressures where he's scrambling for his life and no sacks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. It's a bit of a misleading stat. I mean, sacks can be huge momentum shifts and huge plays in the game, but it always doesn't always result in wins and losses necessarily.
No, for sure, for sure. Anything else before we move on?
No, I'd just like to add that, if we imagine getting C.J. Gable going in the rest of the games, and we have Zach Claros and the receivers, we have, the run game and the pass game, both threats. I think that this offense can be pretty darn incredible.
I think what we saw in this game is, especially from the offense, is they are their own worst enemy. They had those four straight plays in the middle of, I believe it was between the middle of the first quarter and the middle of the second quarter, where on four straight drives, they turned the ball over. They had the Claros fumble that was returned for a touchdown. They had the Claros interception. They had the Chad Owens fumble. And then I don't know if it counts as a turnover, but I count it the blocked punt. Without those, and those four turnovers resulted in 24 of Toronto's 36 points. Without those turnovers, the Ticats blow the Argos out in this game. They probably beat them by 40-plus points. So if they can just limit their mistakes, this is my offense. This is my takeaway from the offense after all the glowing things that we've said about them. If they don't turn the ball over, they will not lose football games. I mean, yeah, they went into Calgary a couple weeks ago and didn't really turn the ball over and were in a slugfest on the road with the best team in the league and went toe-to-toe with them and lost. But if Hamilton doesn't turn the ball over and they operate like they did when they weren't turning the ball over, I don't see how this team can be stopped by any defense. I don't care how good you think they are. How good you think the opposing defense is, I don't see how they can be stopped.
And, the penalties were down this week. Looking at the stats right now, there's only four penalties on offense. Now they had three on defense, but well under 10 penalties is great, in my opinion, for a team that's had a lot of trouble with the penalties this year.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So defensively, I'm not going to be as positive as you were. Obviously, the defense, when it mattered, stepped up, made some big plays. But one of my key takeaways, especially early in this game, and it kind of plagued them throughout the game, but as the momentum started to shift in Hamilton's direction, it stopped being a problem. I thought this was a very sloppy tackling performance by the Ticats. I felt like there was a number of times when they had guys wrapped up and let them get away. There were times when they had them the ability to tackle them, went for the big hit instead of trying to wrap them up and gave up more yards than they should have. I just don't think the defense in this game, especially during the times when the Argos had control of the momentum, just a lot of just poor tackling by the team I thought I saw.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, the secondary was burnt pretty bad for a lot of the game. They had the new guy, Cassius Vaughn, in there, and he got torched pretty bad in this game. Sermons was on the other side, I believe, and I'm not sure how he did, but the secondary continues to be the Achilles heel on this team, and they're gonna have to figure it out because, yes, the offense is great and they can put up a ton of points, but you never know. Like, if the defense keeps giving up a ton of points, then you just don't know if the offense can do it every single game. So they're gonna have to. I know they're switching it around each week, and maybe Cassius Vaughn is a really good player and he'll improve. Maybe he's not used. Well, we know he's not used to the CFL game because this was his first CFL start. So, but they're gonna have to figure it out in the secondary. I think that the front four is good, the linebackers are good, and we have some good guys in the secondary: Courtney Stephen, Emmanuel Davis. Johnny Sears Jr. is a good player when he's healthy, but they're gonna have to figure out those corner spots. And if they have the guys right now, they're gonna have to improve.
Well, with Vaughn, yes, he did get beat for two big touchdowns by Torrey Gurley. You had to expect that the Argos were going to pick on the new guy. And I thought, despite the fact that he gave up those two touchdowns, I don't think he played a poor game. And that there are two guys in that secondary that I think you can build this unit around. And you mentioned them. It's Courtney Stephen and it's Emmanuel Davis. They both had interceptions in this game. Now, Stephen's interception came thanks to a hellacious hit by Adrian Tracy on Ricky Ray that had the ball float out, land right in his hands. And even, again, the Emmanuel Davis interception that he returned for the touchdown that essentially sealed this game was because Ray was hit again, the ball popped up, Davis was there, made the most of it. But I think those two guys are two guys that you need to keep around for as long as you can, and those are the two guys you can build the rest of the secondary around. I think they had great games. I think Courtney Stephen has been one of the most underrated players in this league for a couple of years now, and I think he's a guy that team play like fans of this league do not talk enough about. I think he's excelling at safety in place of Craig Butler right now, and he excelled as the wide side corner for years before that. So I do agree with you that there is some troubled areas, and I think with Vaughn, you're gonna have to deal with the bumps there because he is new to the league. But I think this secondary has some talent, and yeah, they got beat in this one, but there is a group there that I think can do well. They just have to find the right guys. They have two of them for sure in Davis and Steven. Now we have to find out if Vaughn can be a guy, if Sermons can be a guy, and the rest. It's tough to find five guys that are all essentially all-star caliber players, but I feel like I'm kind of just going over the place here. But I do think that at the end of the day, we had two guys in that secondary make big plays that helped win this football game. So I don't want to pile on the secondary too much, and I don't think you did. I'm not. That's not what I'm trying to say. But there was some good there, and we also got to remember the receivers for the Argos are damn good receivers. They were talked about last year as about how good they were, and it's the big three and all this other sorts of stuff. And then they added a guy like Kenny Shaw, who has had a hell of a first year in the CFL, and they got Deontay Spencer, which is the reason that Chad Owens is no longer in Double Blue. And he's had a pretty good year too. So yeah, the secondary still needs work and will continue to need work. But I also think we got to give credit where credit's due with a pretty darn good Argos receiving core.
Yeah, they got a lot of talent, and Ricky Ray had he looked like the former Ricky Ray, of a couple years ago. He was really played a really good game, and he was finding his receivers and throwing long passes out there. And you mentioned Spencer and Child; they're kind of similar players. They got the tall guys like Gurley and Elliott and Hazleton, and then they got the speed with Shaw and Spencer. So there's a talented bunch over there, and they played a really good game. So maybe it was more of the Argos offense having the best game of the year than Hamilton secondary really playing bad.
Yeah, it could be, or it's a combination of both is likely where it ends up. There was something that happened in this game that I want to talk to you about specifically because you watched the game on television. I was live there in person, so our perspectives are different. There was an illegal contact call on Brandon Sermons late in the game. I think it was maybe in the third quarter, and it was right before Courtney Stephens' interception. Now, from where I was sitting, it sure looked like offensive pass interference. It looked way more like the Argo receiver was pulling on Sermon's jersey as opposed to Sermon's making any contact. But again, I was live at the stadium and watching on the big screen. You were watching
That's
at
a tough
home. Do you agree, disagree? Like, did, or did you send it? Because I think I saw what I thought I saw, but I'm more than willing to say that I was wrong if you're going to tell me that on television you saw something different.
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't really – I know I should remember that play, and I wasn't drinking or anything. I was sober, so I don't know why I don't remember that. But, yeah, I don't remember. Oh. So I don't really have much to – you know, much input into that. But yeah, they didn't show the replay on TV or anything, or on the big screen?
They did show the replay on the big screen, but the problem with when they show replays on the big screen is they don't really show the whole play. So the only part I saw was what looked like the Argo receiver grabbing Sermon's jersey. And I'm now, if the illegal contact was before that, then I understand why there's a penalty. But it, from what they showed at Tim Hortons Field, it certainly looked like it was more offensive pass interference. Now, just because you don't know, I've now put this out there. I'm sure anyone who listens to the show, comment section 3 Down Nation, find me on Twitter, wherever. Hell, find me out in the streets and you can tell me I'm an idiot or you can tell me that you thought I was right. I just, now that it's out there, maybe someone who watched on television can give a better example or a better take on this. They saw something different. I hope that's the case. I don't think that when it comes to penalties in this game, I think they were fairly fair to be to kind of be redundant there. I don't think neither team was penalized all that much, and I think it was a pretty clean game for the most part. Some penalties took away some big plays. I just this one play I was just curious about because it sure looked to me like the call should have gone the other way. But like I said, if someone wants to say differently, maybe someone who's not a Ticats fan or an Argos fan, so they don't really, they're not swayed one way or another by their team allegiance, I will listen and change my opinion if it's proven that I was wrong.
Yeah, it's just, you know, who the hell knows what's legal contact or pass interference anymore? It's tough, man.
It sure is. So that's about all I got from this whale of a game. I guess we could talk about special teams, the too many men penalty, another blocked punt. Like, that's if that happens a third week in a row, I think we got a real big problem. 2 weeks in a row is already a problem. Special teams just hasn't been as good this year as it has been in years past. And I saw, I believe it was Drew Edwards wrote for 3 Down Nation that it was a lot of it is new guys playing on the special teams that aren't used to being there and haven't been there before. There was some veterans that the Ticats lost in the offseason, guys who played special teams. So maybe there's a bit of a learning curve there. But we're past the halfway point of the season. Any sort of learning curve should already have been straightened, if you will. So I just very disappointed to see a second blocked punt in as many games for the Ticats.
Yeah, it's just maybe the talent isn't there on special teams. Like, we know that Reinbold has had a lot of success in Hamilton with special teams, and I'm sure the schemes are there and everything's the same. Maybe they're just not, you know, they don't have – because you look at Speedy B, and he's not having the big punt returns or, you know, kickoff returns that he's had in the past. I know he's had a couple touchdowns this year, but it just hasn't been there, the consistency. So maybe the blockers aren't, you know, as talented as they were in years past.
That could be. Speaking of talented, though, how we end these game reviews every week, the Chad Owens jersey watch. Man, this guy just continues to make plays. I knew going into this game, I don't know if we talked about it last week, maybe we did, I knew this guy was going to have a game. I knew he was gonna go out there, he's going to want to prove the Argos wrong for letting him go. 6 catches, 63 yards, and the game-winning touchdown. Obviously, the Ticats would score more points, but it was Owens T that put them up for good. I know he said leading into this game, I heard him on some audio interviews, and he said, week one, yeah, it was kind of a little bit personal to kind of go in there and beat the Argos because of how he was let go, but he said for this one, that's old news, it has nothing to do with it, and seemed pretty genuine in when he said it. But he did keep the touchdown ball that he scored. So I think a little bit of this is I still think he's a little hurt by the fact that the Argos didn't bring him back. But I'm glad, and I never thought I'd say this, that he's in black and gold. This game was his 100th game of his CFL career. So to score the game-winning touchdown on Labor Day against your old team, I think that's pretty cool. So good for Chad Owens. Now on the year, 49 catches, 659 yards, 5 touchdowns, and those projected totals still lead to me wearing his jersey next year. 88 catches, 1,186 yards, 9 TDs. Just, he has been everything and then some for this team since he signed. And when we talked about it back in February, and I'm pretty sure I say this every single week, I did not envision him having this good a season, but man, I'm glad he's in black and gold. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, it is a beautiful throw by Claros right in the corner of the end zone. A really nice catch. He seems like he's had so many nice, spectacular touchdown catches this year, but add that to the list of great catches and, you know, a game winner. So, yeah, I still don't know why the Broncos let him go or even offer him a contract, but it is what it is, and we reap the benefits.
He did have his annual Labor Day fumble, though. So even though he's in a different uniform, he still had to put the ball on the turf. But yeah. That to me is more of a little funny thing than it is. Mm. It was part of that run there that let the Argos get up. But you know what? We won the game, so that's all that really matters, right?
Yeah, for sure. And did you notice Levi Noel for the Argos? I thought that he looks pretty darn good on returns. I think there's you know, he's a U of T product, as you know, and I think he's a talented guy, and I think he might have a pretty good future in the CFL.
I am really excited about him, even though he plays for Toronto. There are so few former U of T alums in the CFL. To see one actually excel, I remember when he was in the draft process, we talked about him with Justin Dunk on the show. I want to talk about him because he was a U of T guy. He said that he had a future in this league, but it was going to be starting on special teams. He has contributed. I think he had a receiving touchdown against Winnipeg a few weeks back in mid August. So this guy's going to contribute. And you know, even though he's playing for Toronto, I'm always happy to see U of T guys excel. And I agree with you. I thought he did really well on specials, returning the ball.
Yeah, it looks like a steal. I mean, I'm not sure what round he went in, but I'm sure it wasn't the first round. And I think the Argos did a pretty good thing picking him up.
Yeah, it looks like a smart move on their part. So. No Ticats news this week. Again, very quiet in the hammer. I guess that's what happens after you get a win. But there is a ton of CFL news to talk about. And unfortunately, the first thing we have to talk about is a bit of sad news. A legend. A guy, unfortunately, you and I are too young to have seen play, but a guy whose name we all know, Normie Kwong, the former Calgary Stampeder and Edmonton Eskimo great, passed away last week. Just a sad loss for the CFL community. I can't really talk much about him. Like I said, I never saw him play. You never saw him play. But I know he had a massive impact on this game. He was the running back that all Canadians were trying. It was his rushing record that John Cornish broke just a few years ago that stood for like a half a century. So that just tells you how good of a player this guy was. And from all reports, just a good dude. Won Grey Cups in Calgary, won Grey Cups in Edmonton, was part of the ownership group that brought the Atlanta Flames to Calgary, was a lieutenant governor of Alberta. Just from all reports, just a really great guy. And this is when legends die, this is it's kind of tough. And no doubt about it, Normie Kwong was a legend.
Yeah, and there's a lot of great players that were played in the 50s, 60s, 70s that, to be honest, I wouldn't know about. But I always knew about Normie Kwong. I don't know why. But I just always knew his name. I knew his face. And, you know, to have a record that stood for so many years is pretty damn impressive. So, yeah, it's, sad for the CFL and both Alberta-based teams.
Yeah, for sure. I don't really think there's anything we can say to lessen the impact of this man's death on those that cared about him and those that knew him. So we'll try to be as respectful as possible in moving on to the next thing. And unfortunately, when it comes to respect, the next thing we got to talk about involves a guy who has very little of it. The Rough Riders, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, signed Khalif Mitchell to the practice roster last week. And normally when the Riders sign guys, you see Rider fans in like so happy and, Yeah, we got this guy's going to be an all-star. This, especially when it's older players, this guy's going to be great again. This did not sit well with the vast majority of Rider fans. I don't know if you listened to fellow CFL podcast, the Piffles podcast, but they went in on Khalif Mitchell. None of them were happy. They talk about how they're homers, and they were like, this is terrible. Rod Peterson said this was a bad move. And if Rod Peterson is disagreeing with something the Saskatchewan Rough Riders did, you know it doesn't sit well with the vast majority of Rider fans.
Yeah, this guy's been, a bozo for, years and years that he's played in the CFL. Yeah, I completely forgot that he even existed, to be honest, and came out of nowhere that he signed with the Riders. It's such a bad PR move that I just don't see them keeping him, but I don't know. I guess they are. They haven't released him yet, and they've They've heard all the things that the Rider fans are saying, that they're pissed off about this. So I don't know what Chris Jones is thinking bringing this guy in. I know they need help on the defensive line, but man, I just don't see how this benefits the team. We don't know if he's the same player that he was years ago. He could be still not a he could be a bad player now, and he's just a bad person overall. So I just think it's a dumb move by the Riders overall.
Well, this is what I don't get. It's not like the Riders are a Kalief Mitchell away from a deep playoff run. At least when this team was flirting with signing Greg Hardy, who is also a human piece of garbage, at least I could look at that and go, okay, he's a pass rusher. He's younger. He's a younger player. Maybe he wants to rehabilitate himself. He's got to find a way to do it. I still think the signing would have been crapped upon by most Rider fans just as Kalief Mitchell signing is. But Kalief Mitchell's in his early 30s, hasn't played in the league since I think in the early parts of the 2014 season. And he was a dominant player with the BC Lions, but it seemed to be, I remember the Lions traded him to Toronto and he didn't want to go. And then from about, I think he had a pretty decent year with the Argos, but nothing too earth-shattering. But after that, it just kind of seems like he stopped being that dominant player. So I would understand a move like this, even if the guy is a garbage person, if it's like, man, but the talent outweighs, because that's what happens with, you see crappy people in pro sports all the time. If the talent outweighs how crappy they are, they will find work. I don't understand. This just seems bizarre to me, honestly, because like I said, the Riders are not a player of Kalief Mitchell's caliber away from winning the Grey Cup, and they are easily a year, if not more, away from being a contending team, and by then Kalief Mitchell will be out of the league again. So this to me just I just don't understand how this makes sense. That's pretty much the beginning, middle, and end of it for me.
And he just, sometimes players are, bad people or perceived to be bad people, but their teammates like them. Kalief Mitchell in the past, from all I've heard, he's just been a cancer in the locker room. He was traded to Toronto, and I think it was Andrew Harris that tweeted out, "Good riddance,"
Yeah, that's
So
exactly what happened. I was took the words out of my mouth. I was going to mention that exactly. Yeah, Andrew Harris was like, "I'm glad he's gone."
I don't know what they're thinking either. Like I said, they don't even know if he really has the talent anymore. So it's just a really big head scratcher to me. And I don't see him in the league next year. And I don't see the Rough Riders making a push for the playoffs. I mean, they're 1-9, so it just doesn't make any sense.
Glenn Suter did say during the Riders Bombers game this past weekend that, oh, if the Riders can win this game, they might be able to put a few games in a row and maybe make a push for the playoffs. And I tweeted out, I thought that's really cute of him to say that because he's clearly living in a fantasy land. But I don't really want to talk about Kalief Mitchell anymore. I've said my piece, you've said your piece. Let's move on. We still got to talk about the Riders, though. We don't usually talk about the games anymore. We've gotten away from recapping the games. But there was something that happened in that Bombers Riders games that I want to get your opinion on. The DPI call on Justin Cox that wiped out the interception late in that game that could have given the Riders a chance to get down the field to maybe kick a game-winning field goal. Do you think they got hosed? Hosed or not on that call, Mike? Hosed or not?
I didn't see pass interference on that. Yeah, it was a tough call against the Riders. They had a lot of mistakes in that game. Carpegna missed two field goals, I believe. So yeah, I think that they got a raw deal on that play, but they could have done more things earlier in the game to improve they could have won that game on those two field goals. So yes, I think it was a bad call, but not sure. It's okay, well, I'm getting shown something that it was pass interference now, so I don't know, whatever. To me live, it didn't look like it, but maybe it was, I don't know.
So here's my problem with it. There's a picture floating around out there of Justin Cox holding on to Weston Dressler's arm. And I agree. So you're not supposed to do that. Earlier in the game, Naaman Roosevelt, I think it was Naaman Roosevelt, had Johnny Adams grab his arm in the very same way in the Riders challenged. And it was called not pass interference. Now, this call, I'm going to say this once and for all because people are saying, oh, that this is why they lost the game. That's bull dookie. They lost this game because they missed two field goals. They missed an extra point. Darian Durant threw an interception in the end zone when the Riders were deep in Winnipeg territory. Chris Jones wasted a challenge on a Naaman Roosevelt incomplete, like a
Yes.
touchdown catch
Yeah, this
that
is all
was.
true, but that aside, they had a chance. I mean, all that happened, you're right, but if they don't get called for that pass interference call, then maybe they win this game. I mean, all that stuff happened and they're still in the game. And if they don't get that call, then maybe they win it.
True, true. I just don't like boiling down a game to one play. I just there was just so much happens in that game that yes, it definitely didn't help, but it wasn't the reason they lost. Because even if they get that interception, they were still, I guess, maybe a little bit, I think they were in their territory. So they still would have had to have marched down in about 20 or so seconds to kick to attempt a game-winning field goal. And as we saw, Tyler Caprina throughout that game couldn't hit the broadside of a barn with a football off his foot. So who knows? The game was tied. Maybe they don't get it. They go into overtime. Winnipeg still wins. I just, if we talked about this, I think it was back when the Ticats played the Bombers, and there were three overturned calls on calls that were called pass interference that were then reviewed and called pass interference. And I said, and you might have agreed, or you said, and I agreed. I can't remember what it was. If they're going to boil this down to the split second freeze frame definition of pass interference, it's too much. Now, this was called in the moment. This wasn't a review. But this to me, that just looked like a good football play. Honestly, if that's pass interference, then every single play has pass interference, and that's not the football I want to watch.
No, I just don't think you make that call. Like, maybe it was by the book, it was pass interference, but I mean, there's 30 seconds left on the clock or whatever it was. That's a huge gain for the Bombers, and I just don't. I think you keep the flag in your pocket in that situation, but it didn't turn out that way.
No, it didn't. Okay, so next piece of CFL news coming out of Montreal. They are making a change at quarterback. Kevin Glenn out, Rakeem Cato in. Thoughts? What do you think of this?
I don't know what to think about it. I mean, Glenn has played well at times and not so well at other times. That's kind of the way that he is.
Yeah, I was going to say, so he's played like Kevin Glenn.
Cato, I don't know what to think about this guy. He looks really good at times. He's kind of like Glenn, and then he looks terrible at times. So I think that Montreal's on a downward spiral. You know, they had a couple weeks ago, they looked really good, but I think that this is, I don't think they come back from this. I think that they're gonna go way down. I think they'll be one of the worst teams in the league after this. And I don't think that quarterback was necessarily the problem. Yeah, we've talked about it before, the coaching staff. I don't think they have the most talent. Well, they have the defensive coordinator is really, really good defensive coordinator, but the guy running the show is questionable at best. So, you know, another move by Pop that's gonna, you know, gonna make him sink or swim. Because if it doesn't work out with Cato, then it's gonna be tough for him to explain it away.
Yeah, is it time for the Alouettes to tie the can to Jim Pop, or at least Jim Pop, the head coach? Because to be honest with
Yeah.
you, the move makes sense to me in this scenario. Montreal needs to find a quarterback that they can have for the next decade. That's not Kevin Glenn. So if they believe that Rakeem Cato can be that guy, I understand the move. But if you're going to do that, then why bring Glenn in the first place? Or they brought him in last year because they thought that they would give him a chance to make the playoffs. They didn't. Let him go in the offseason. And then say you're going to start from scratch. Like to do this now, they're what, 3-7, I believe. Their season is essentially over. And I understand wanting to develop these younger players, but they gave up a first round pick for someone else, and that guy's name is Vernon Adams. If they're playing Cato over Adams, that tells me that Vernon Adams is nowhere near ready to play in the CFL. And if that's the case, Montreal Alouettes just pissed away a first round pick.
And I mean, this is Cato's a guy that there were he was rumored to be cut coming out of training camp, and now he's a starting quarterback. It's just like, what's going on there in Montreal? It's doesn't look good for them, that's for sure.
No, it does not. You know what? Last thing, CFL news we got to talk about. It's the annual bitch fest because the CFL has announced who will perform at the halftime show of the Grey Cup, and it is a band that a bunch of old men do not know. It is One Republic. I must be an old man because I don't really know who they are. Although, after I found out like that these guys were going to be the halftime show, I tweeted out, I don't know who these guys are. I had a friend clue me in that I did know one of their songs. They apparently did a song about 10 years ago with Timbaland. And I heard the song and I was like, oh yeah, okay, I know this song. I didn't know that they were still a band, but last year Fall Out Boy was the halftime show, and I didn't think that they had had a hit record in over a decade, and I was told that I was an idiot. people are going to complain about the halftime show no matter who gets picked. I'm not going to complain about the halftime show because it's the least important part of the Grey Cup for me. I don't know how you feel. I'm sure you probably feel the same way, but I just wish that people would just, yeah, it's a halftime show. You don't like it. So what?
Exactly. And, you know, I never heard of Imagine Dragons when they were the Grey Cup halftime show. I later learned that I knew one of their songs, and I thought they put on a pretty good halftime show.
They were freaking awesome. I didn't really know who they were either. And like you, someone told me, oh no, you know this song. And I thought there's a few halftime shows that I have liked. I thought Bruno Mars at the Super Bowl a couple years ago was really good. I like Katy Perry, so I enjoyed her Super Bowl halftime show. Imagine Dragons at the Grey Cup I thought were awesome. That's one of the few halftime shows I actually paid attention to. And my go-to for great halftime shows will always be Prince at the Super Bowl in the rain, shredding that guitar, being Prince. That to me is the standard for all Super Bowl halftime shows. That's the standard for all halftime shows for anything, period. But yeah, like I'm with you, man. Imagine Dragons, I was very unfamiliar with them, and I thought they freaking crushed it.
Yeah, I was really impressed with them, but overall, I could care less who the halftime show is. I mean, every year we go through this, people complaining about it, you know, I don't know this band, why aren't they Canadian? I mean, it's just the CFL trying to draw in fans that normally wouldn't watch. I don't think they had Bieber in 2012 and people tuned in for that. Maybe young girls tuned in for that. But you really think that they're going to become CFL fans afterwards? I don't think so. But, you know, they're just trying to, you know, bring in one of the biggest names that they can. And I guess OneRepublic has followed pretty well on YouTube. They millions and millions of views and all that stuff. But I don't care. To be honest, I just don't care. I'm watching the Grey Cup because I want to watch the football game. And the halftime show is just, it doesn't matter to me.
The halftime show is background noise while I chat with my friends about what's happened in the first half of the game. Or what I do is I will click over to the NFL Sunday night game for 15 minutes and ignore the halftime show. Like, to me, it's not a big deal whatsoever. I only like to talk about it because it makes me laugh when people get so up in arms over who the Grey Cup halftime show is. And the thing is we're recording this Thursday night. OneRepublic is playing before the NFL season opener between the Denver Broncos and the Carolina Panthers. So I think they're pretty popular. Like, just because some 45-year-old men in the sports media don't know who they are doesn't mean that it's a bad choice. And here's the thing. When it comes to a halftime show, every single person has their idea of who they want there. There is someone who will complain about it because we all don't like the same stuff. I heard names like Drake thrown out there. I'm not a big Drake fan. I don't really want to watch a Drake concert. I heard The Weeknd thrown out there. Not really a huge fan of that guy either. But there are people who are. And these are, just like OneRepublic, these will attract eyeballs. Whether they stay and watch the rest of the game, I don't know. Maybe they will. Who knows? I'm just saying that I think when people get so bent out of shape over a halftime show, I think it's much ado about nothing.
I mean, if I had my choice, it would be Slayer or, you know, Pennywise or Rancid or something. Or no effects. I mean, I'm sure that a lot of the listeners don't know any of those bands. But, you know, if they had one of those bands, I'd be interested. But otherwise, I don't give a crap.
Exactly. So, news done. Next, Mike, Bozo of the Week, who you got?
Okay, well, this is I had a tough time with this. I just think that, you know, he's been named before. And
we have our first two-time Bozo?
Yeah.
Are you naming me again?
No. You're a close second, but
always a bridesmaid, very rarely the bride.
Exactly. I'm going to go with Arash Madani just for his – I've heard that he's been saying stuff that the CFL is fudging the TV ratings numbers and all this. And for a guy that got his start in the CFL with the Ottawa Renegades, he sure likes to dump on the league. So I don't have much more to say about it other than that he just – it seems that him and Rod Peterson are teaming up in the conspiracy watch for the CFL. So he gets my Bozo of the Week. Again, you know, like we talked about Rod, I'm sure he's a nice person, but he comes off, if you're a CFL fan, you're probably not a big fan of his.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm sure if you were to meet him in person, have a conversation with him, he's probably a nice dude. He's probably a smart dude. He's probably an honest dude. But yeah, just the public persona that he puts out there is of a jackwagon, essentially. So Like, I've been told he's not paid to cover the league. The only time he gets paid to cover the CFL is at Grey Cup. If that's the case, then just don't talk about it. If you don't like what's going on, just don't talk about it. No one's saying you have to have an opinion on everything, and no one says that you have to tell everyone your opinion on anything. You don't like something, shut up about it.
Yeah, it's just, I don't understand why. I know he worked for Sportsnet, and, you know, they don't have the best view on the CFL, but it's getting a little tiring. Even though I don't even pay attention to him, really, it's like I see it on Twitter through other people. So, yeah, he gets my Buzz of the Week this week, and hopefully I don't have to name him again this year.
Well, he's well on his way to being named Bozo of the Year at this rate. If he's already captured two.
Yeah. There were some low TV ratings numbers that came out maybe a couple weeks ago, you know, in the 300,000 range. I mean, are they making those numbers up too? I don't get it.
You know what? I don't get it either. I don't want to get it. You said your piece. Once again, let's move on to some more interesting stuff. We have got a game this upcoming week. Sunday in Toronto, Rematch City, baby. Rematch City. The Ticats, I think, really have a chance to cripple the Argos' playoff hopes with this one if they can get a win here. And hot off the presses, Mike, Ricky Ray, done for the year. Punctured lung apparently suffered in the game against the Ticats. He took a beating. And when I got home from that game and I talked to my dad, the first thing he said was, because he didn't go, he watched on TV, he just said, man, Ricky Ray looked like he got beat up. And clearly, he got beat up. So in this one, Dan LeFever, former Ticats quarterback, Dan LeFever, looks like he's going to start on Sunday. So Ray's out, LeFever in. Got to bode well for the Ticats, right?
You'd have to think so. I mean, Ray had one of the best games I've seen him play in a long time. Pretty sure the punctured lung came on the Adrian Tracy hit, which was the turning point in the game, in my opinion, with the interception in the end zone. So, yeah, it adds another interesting layer to this game. You know, the former Ticat, Dan LeFever, playing behind center. It's going to be interesting to see how he plays, if he's got a grasp of that offense, because I'm sure it's quite complicated, just like the Ticat's offense. So I think we have a better chance with him behind center, but I also think that Dan LeFever is a pretty talented guy. But yeah, I would have picked the Ticats to win this game no matter what. But you got to think they have a better chance now.
I have long been a big Dan LeFever fan, going back to his days at Central Michigan. I think this guy has all the tools to be a star in the CFL. He's now got his opportunity. Unfortunately, it comes because Ricky Ray got hurt, and it seems as if that has been the story of his career since he got traded to the Argos. Just every single year, he can't stay healthy. He's played.
Do you think this is the last we've seen of him?
Honestly, I would not be surprised. I think he's just so beaten up. Yeah. I really think that I may have been in attendance at Ricky Ray's last game. If that is the case, what a pleasure to watch him play. What a game to go out on, too. Like, he did. We didn't talk about it much, but he almost outperformed Zach Caleros. And that's not an easy thing to do, but Ricky Ray had a hell of a football game. Was a hell of a football player. I hope it's not the end of his career. But just the way he's been beaten up the last few years, I really could see him just saying, you know what, I had my day in the sun, and it's time to move on with my post-football life. So we're obviously not going to know anything like that soon, but it wouldn't shock me, Mike. It really wouldn't shock me if we've seen the last of Ricky Ray.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think that he's made, you know, quite a bit of money for a CFL player. I'm sure he's been paid $400,000+ a year for, you know, several years now. So he's probably got quite a bit of money saved up. Maybe he figures that, I'm going to get out of football before I'm totally at the age of 45, 50, you know, just crippled up. So I think he has a tough decision to make. But I think that, you know, punctured lung, that sounds pretty bad. So he just can't seem to stay healthy, and we might have seen the last of him. I think we might have.
Okay, so we got to move on and talk about this game. Rematches are always difficult. We saw it last year, I'm not entirely sure of the score, but I know the Ticats blew the Argos out on Labor Day, and then they played them in the rematch the Saturday after, and it was a very tight contest that the Ticats did win. So they have swept the Argos last year. They have a chance to sweep the Argos this year for the first time in back-to-back seasons to sweep the Argos since 92 and 93. Long time ago. So a win here. Ticats sweep the Argos. This would be, I believe, their seventh straight win, including the playoffs last year. where they would win over the Argos, which makes people in Hamilton pretty happy. So offensively, here the things that they have to do, first and foremost, don't make mistakes. If they don't turn the ball over multiple times, they will win this football game. Simple as that. They had four turnovers against the Argos that gave them 24 points that we talked about in our game review. If they don't do something like that, they will steamroll and win this football game. Second thing I think they got to do, they got to win on first down. This is a stat that I got from our buddy Mark Fulton, FenderGuy69 on Twitter. The Ticast averaged 9.9 yards on first down on Labor Day. Just think about that number for a second. Essentially, on first down, they got a first down. So if they do that, if they even come within a yard and a half of that, they get 8.5 yards on first down on Sunday. They're going to win this football game. Third thing I think they got to do, they got to feed the beast, man. We saw what CJ Gable can do. So I want to see the Labor Day Classic used as a jumping off point for a great second half for Carl Jr. Let's see him get another 12 to 15 touches in this game. Let's see him put up another 100-plus total yards. Let's see C.J. Gable get a chance to be C.J. Gable. And lastly, the fourth thing here, just let Zach Caleros be Zach Caleros. We talked about it earlier. This guy is on fire. 1,510 yards. His yards per game average tops in the CFL at 377.5. Said it before. 14 TDs in four games, three behind Riley and Mitchell for first in the league. That's incredible. And his 7-to-1 TD to interception ratio is second in the league behind Trevor Harris's 11-to-1. So don't make mistakes. Win on first down. Let's see CJ Gable get the ball. And just let Zach Caleros go out there and be Zach Caleros. And the Ticats will lead BMO Field 6-5.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with all of that stuff. And yeah, I just really hope that CJ Gable gets a lot of touches. He's hungry to show what he has, and he sure did last week. I mean, every time he touches the ball, he's gonna bring it all, because that's just the way he plays. So I'm hoping, like you just said, that he gets a lot of touches. And now on the defensive side of the ball, I just, you know, with the, you know, Lefevre's had some experience, if he's gonna be the guy, but I think that we have to send a lot of pressure on him, and he's gonna make mistakes. He hasn't started in this league for a couple years now. We don't know if he's the same quarterback as he was when after he blew out his knee. You know, just a side note, I was really surprised that he got a tryout with the Buccaneers, but or he got signed by the Buccaneers. But yeah, just pressure this guy, and he's going to make mistakes, and we should win this game.
Completely agree. It's been,
and the secondary has to be better. You know, Cassius Vaughn, if he's going to start again, needs to cover Gurley better. I mean, Gurley had a huge game. I know that it wasn't all his faults, and it made him look worse than maybe he actually played because of those big plays by Gurley. But, you know, just pressure whoever the quarterback is and cover better, and you should be good.
Well, it's interesting in this game when it comes to the defense, where last game they prepared for a, I don't want to say immobile quarterback, but Ricky Ray is not exactly what you would call a dual threat. Dan Lefevre very much is. Now, we haven't seen him play much, if at all. What do you get, like two plays when he was with the Alouettes last year? And yep. That was after he tore up his knee with the Ticats the year before. So we haven't seen him play much. He hasn't seen any live, like real game action. I don't know if he saw any time in the preseason with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I don't think he did. I think he was released before the preseason even began. Mm-hmm. So it's been a long time since this guy has seen live football. So he might be a little rusty, but I know this dude is talented. I really do. But It's going to be an interesting game plan to see what the Ticats do with a different style quarterback in this one, which I think could pose problems for them. Not necessarily saying I think they're going to lose the game, but it definitely adds a different wrinkle to this rematch than it would have if Ray was playing.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's got to be better than Kilgore. I mean, Kilgore was pretty terrible when he was in there. So we don't know what's going to happen with the Toronto situation for the rest of the season, but it looks like Lefevre's going to be the guy. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how he plays.
Yeah, we're going to find out Sunday. You ready to do some picks, Mike?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So in our pick'em group, the top three stay the exact same as they did a week ago. Your girlfriend, Christina, is in third place with 4,865 points. I'm in second place with 5,384 points. And Cappy D sits in first place with 6,120 points. On a bright side, however, Mike, you rose two spots from 19th to 17th with 3,515 points. You're still a long ways away from the top spot, but you're making a move. That's good for you, right?
Yep, 4-1 this week, and hoping to go 4-0 this upcoming week and really make a big jump.
Okay, well, let's get into the picks right now then for this week. Friday night, no more Thursday night games. Now that the NFL's on, every game is on the weekend. I, to be honest with you, prefer it that way, Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. That's when I prefer my football. Deal with the Thursday night stuff. That's cool. I'm glad that we're back to Friday, Saturday, Sunday stuff when it comes to the CFL. So Friday night in BC, we have the Montreal Alouettes taking on the BC Lions. I'm going to ask you who you got, but I think this is kind of a no-brainer right now, no?
Yeah, it is. I mean, just the way Montreal's playing and their situation there, you got to go with BC. And it's so tough for Eastern teams to go into BC Place and steal a win. So it's pretty much a no-brainer. I think everyone you'd ask would be going with BC, so I'm going to pick them.
Yeah, I'm also taking the BC Lions. The only thing I could say in Montreal's defense is maybe the Rakeem Cato factor. The Lions don't have a ton of film on him. Maybe he can surprise them, but BC is just too good right now. Playing at home, coming off a bye. Montreal's making the cross-country trip, playing a late-night game. It's all adding up to the Lions rolling in this one. Saturday afternoon, it's the Banjo Bowl between the Saskatchewan Roughriders and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. The Bombers won on, well, not on Labor Day, but their version of the Labor Day Classic last week for the first time since 2004. Mike, who you got in the Banjo Bowl?
I got to go with the Bombers again. I'm not sure if Saskatchewan's going to win another game this year. They might tie the record, the terrible record of the Ticats from 2003 or 2004 or whatever year it was, 1-17. So
it was 2003.
Yeah, I got to go with the Bombers. Matt Nichols is playing well still, and they got a pretty good defense, and they're just a better team than the Roughriders.
It's tough to win back-to-back games against the same opponent, but if you win the first leg on the road, it makes it much easier to win the second leg at home. I had the Riders last week. I thought some of that mosaic magic would work in their favor. It did not. I am taking the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in this to get their sixth straight win. That team is getting hot right now, and they could be trouble for teams in the playoffs. But yeah, I got the Bombers in this one. Saturday evening, another rematch. This time of an actual Labor Day Classic. This has the Calgary Stampeders heading to your stomping grounds to take on the Edmonton Eskimos. Mike, who you got in this one?
This is probably the toughest one of the week. Calgary's looked amazing. In past episodes, I said I wasn't really overly impressed with Mitchell, but he's kind of changed my tune over the last couple games. He's looked really good with the deep ball. Just overall, he's been playing really well. But still, I'm going to go with the Eskimos just because they're at home. There's going to be a big crowd there. I think they're going to be pumped up for that. Maybe I'm crazy, but I got to go with the Eskimos.
Well, if you're crazy, let me hop on that crazy train with you. I think the Calgary Stampeders are above and beyond the best team in this league. I don't think they're going to go 16-1-1. They're going to lose one or two more games this season. And I think this one's going to be, I think the Eskimos are going to find a way to get it done at home in front of what I'm hoping is a very big crowd. The Eskimos have been up and down this year. You never know what you're going to get from Edmonton week in, week out. There's so much talent on that team, though. I think they find a way to do something to knock the Stamps off in this one and get a much-needed win. So I, too, am taking the Edmonton Eskimos. Last game of the week, Sunday afternoon. I could go on and on about how I think that's a dumb decision, but I don't want to get into that here. Ticats at Argos. Mike, you got the Ticats, right?
Yeah, I got the Ticats. Just the way that they're playing on offense, we talked about it at length. So, yeah, I got the Ticats.
Same here. We did a whole game preview about Ticats and Argos. We watched Monday, and I don't think this team does not beat itself. They will win most of the games they have remaining on their schedule. Hamilton in this one. We got all the same picks this week, so if you go 4-0, I'm also going 4-0. So, yay for 4-0.
Yeah, hopefully. Yep, let's do it.
All right, so you ready for some questions, big man?
Yeah.
Okay, we got three pretty good ones this week. We start off with one from Adam. This is a different Adam than normally sends us questions. You can find this guy on Twitter, @AdamOutside. He asks, if the Ticats miss the playoffs or go out in one? Any chance Austin is out and Steinhauer takes over as head coach? Or does the GM take the heat? Mike, your thoughts.
No.
That's it? Okay. Honestly, that echoes my... Here's what I'm going to say. I'll let you get some more in, but here's what I'm going to say. First, there's no chance this team's making the playoffs or missing the playoffs. None. No. Montreal is a complete tire fire. The Argos just lost their best player. You only have to finish in the top two. I wrote a piece for Three Down Nation talking about how the East will be won. Go look at Hamilton's schedule. It is not difficult. They have two games against Alberta teams. They get both of them at home. And I only put the Eskimos in there because of the defending champs. They're not as good as they were last year. So they're going to come to Hamilton late in the season. I cannot see any way in which the Ticats don't win that game. They play Calgary in October here in Hamilton. That is a game that the Ticats could potentially lose. But everything else, and I think we talked about last week, sets up for the Ticats to go on a run here. I would be shocked if this team didn't finish in first place. So saying that, there's no way Austin or anyone else in this organization is let go, even if they do miss the playoffs or they do go one and done. That's just not going to happen. We have made it to two Grey Cups and three straight East Finals with this coaching staff. If this team wins first place, then they already get to the East Finals. So that's four straight East Final appearances. Come on. There's no way Kent Austin is not the head coach of the Tampa Tigers next year, unless he doesn't want to be. That's the only way I see it.
That's what I was going to say. Unless something crazy happens and he steps down, but he's not getting fired. There's no way that's happening. You know, it's funny that he mentioned the GM, and I was like, well, Ken Austin's the GM. And I'm like, well, no, he's not. It's Eric Tillman. Yeah. He's kind of like in the shadows. Eh? Even though he's actually the GM now, he's kind of lurks in the shadows and you don't really hear about him too much. But yeah, there's no way that Ken Austin isn't the head coach next year of the Tiger Cats unless he steps down.
Okay, so regular contributor Adam asked us a pretty fun question here. He said, if you could create your perfect TSN panel using players and coaches from this year's Tiger Cats team, who would they be? Just for clarification, Adam picked Simone Lawrence, Peter Diakowski, and Brandon Banks. So Mike, who are your three?
I'm going to have to go with two of his picks, Lawrence and Diakowski. You know, Diakowski's a funny guy. He has a ton of personalities. Lawrence, you know, same thing.
Okay, not to cut you off. I literally have in my notes those two guys. And I said Peter Diakowski because the guy has a ton of personality. And Simone Lawrence, it literally says, I mean, come on, how not? So those two completely on the same page with. So who's your third guy?
That's can I pick a coach?
Yeah, you can pick a coach.
I'm going to go Austin. I think that if you could get this guy, get his opinions out there, I think it'd be really, really interesting. So, yeah, I'm going to go Diakowski, Lawrence, and Austin.
Okay, so I went with a coach as well, but I didn't go with Ken Austin. I went with a former guest of the show. I went with Jeff Reinbold. And I didn't just go with him because he was kind enough to come on here and talk football with us in what may be my favorite moment we've ever had on this podcast. But this guy is a character. Years ago when he was the head coach of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, you could see that this guy was a character. And clearly, if you haven't listened to the episode we did with him, go back and find it and listen. This guy is an amazing, amazing storyteller. He knows this game of football. He's been around it for longer than we've been born. Not much longer than I've been born, but still longer than we've been born. And he knows this game inside and out. I think he would be a fantastic contributor. He's been a head coach. He's been a defensive coordinator. He's been a special teams coordinator. He's worked in the CFL. He's worked over in Europe. Like, this guy is a world – like, he's been everywhere. He's coached – I think he said, if I'm not mistaken, he's coached everywhere you can coach football with the exception of the Antarctic. And if he gets the opportunity, he will coach a team down there. He'll try to. So this guy has been everywhere. He has a wealth of knowledge. He was my pick. Austin's not a bad pick. I'm not going to say he's a bad pick, but – no, Jeff Reinbold, hands down, was when I got this question, he was my number one pick.
And he has experience doing the analyst thing. I mean,
he does with the podcast he does out in the UK. So yeah, he
knows. Yeah, he's on TV there too. Mm-hmm. Sky Sports, I think. Yep. I'm not sure.
But, nope, you're right.
But yes, he has the experience too. And yeah, I agree that he would be a great addition to that team as well.
All right, so third and final question. This comes from Rob. You can find him on Twitter at 99AATigersCoach. Now, he asked a question that I actually got a chance. So I went to the tailgate between the Mac and Ticats game last week, And it was because Rob invited me to it. And I had a great time, had a couple of beers, had some great food. We chatted some football. He had sent this question before then, and him and I got a chance to talk about it a little bit. And I told him, don't worry, me and Mike are going to talk about it on the show. So here's what he had to say. And I'll give you what he kind of said and his reasoning for it. He said, could you see the Ticats signing Terrell Sinkfield if he would sign for the 2018 season as well as the remainder of sign for two and a half years, essentially. He said, if you get 2018, maybe you hide Chad Owens on the sixth game injured list. And his reasoning was, if you get him for that extra year, you get him for longer, would it be worth having him for longer as opposed to having Chad Owens for maybe just this season? So it was an interesting idea and one I wanted to get your opinion on. So here we go. What's your answer, Mike?
Well, I think long-term, you know, Sink is a better option than Owens, but I just don't see them taking Owens out of the lineup the way he's performed. And, I mean, they must be paying attention to the Chad Owens jersey watch.
Well, they have to be, right? Like, if they're not, they're foolish. It's the hottest thing going today. It's the NWO of podcast talk.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'd love to see Sinkfield back with the Ticats. I think he has a ton of talent. I think he... peaked last year, and I think he's an all-around player now. So, yes, I'd love to see him, but I don't see Owens, you know, getting taken out of the roster, the starting depth chart. You know what I mean?
I absolutely do, and it's so hard to say this, because if you had asked me this before the season, I would have said, in a heartbeat, hell, don't just put Owens on the sixth game, cut him outright, and bring Sinkfield back. But I've become a fan. Man, I have, like, this guy is just so much fun to watch. He's been playing great football. Chad Owens I'm talking about. It would be a damn shame to take him off the starting roster to bring back Terrell Sinkfield. I understand the sentiment of saying you get the younger player for longer. And if they can do that, if bring Sinkfield back, you don't even have to play him this year. You can ease him in a little bit. Maybe you can find some ratio way in which to get Owens and Sink on the roster at the same time. I don't know how it would work. It would be difficult. I'm not paid to make those decisions. I'm not even paid to watch the game. I just like watching the game. So I'm not going to sit here and tell the team what they should or shouldn't do. If they can get a guy like Terrell Sinkfield signed for 2+ years, I think you do it regardless of your team situation. I just don't know if Sinkfield would want to do that. I don't know how you would make that work cap-wise or roster-wise. I just think, like you, it'd be a damn shame to get Chad Owens off the field with how well he's played through the first 10 games of this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to see Sink back with the Ticats, but I just don't know how it would work out. Maybe you could rotate him in, take out Owens out for one play, put Sinkfield in certain packages and all that, but you'd think that he'd want to be a full-time starter if he comes back to the CFL. So, yeah, it's a good question, and it's tough to come up with a really good answer. So I like both Owens and Sinkfield, and I love for both of them to be on the team.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's kind of an embarrassment of riches if you get Sinkfield back. Now, I don't know, did you see the Twitter chatter with Simone Lawrence, Terrell Sinkfield, and Jeff Reinbold? Simone offered him a couch to stay on. Reinbold said I could have some, he would have food for him. So maybe there's something in the work here where Sinkfield might come back. I don't know, but whatever the team does, their receiving core is absolutely loaded with talent. If they were to add a guy like Terrell Sinkfield and get him on the field with all these guys, just watch out.
And you know that Zach and him had a good connection, so yeah, it'd just be another weapon added to this team.
And he could be a guy that they could use on kickoffs and punts as well to maybe put Brandon Banks in the offense a little more. It would just be an embarrassment of riches if they were to get this guy back. And if they do, I'll be super happy. I just hope it doesn't lead to Chad Owens not getting on the field, because I think he's really earned his keep this year and proven that he can still be a valued member of a team and a guy who's on pace for over 1,000 yards as are Tolliver, Fantuz, and Tasker. So I just don't want to see him come off the field. I think we talked last week about Keon Raymond and how the Argos cut him, and it was like they signed him and he did everything they could have needed him to do, and then they still let him go because of a cap thing. I don't think it would be fair. Terrell Sinkfield's a great player, but Chad Owens has come in here. He's done everything that he's been asked of, and he's produced. He has earned the right to stay on the field, even ahead of a guy like Terrell Sinkfield who hasn't been here. But again, I wouldn't be upset if the old number 14 came back and played for the Ticats this year.
Yeah, just, you know, why mess with a good thing, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. So I think that about does it for the week, Mike. Another episode in the books. So don't forget, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, listen to it, or download it at 3downnation.com. You want to have a question answered? We got some great ones this week that we got to debate, kind of fun. So throw our questions our way. You can hit us up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter digits as always.
Mike_TechEd.
And you can find me, Josh, at JoshSmith_82. And of course, post those longer questions in the comment section of 3 Down Nation when this show goes up. So that was episode 55, the double nickels, former TechEd Stevie Bags number of Podski Weeby. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw. Argos suck.
Eat it. Ah, you got me. Argos suck.